I have been called a surrogate a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
Welcome aboard to the Progressive Voices Network. I am Nicole Sandler. You're hearing the Jeff Sessions testimony in the background at the Senate Intelligence Committee. Today, because this is going on during showtime, we thought we would carry the testimony live, as just about everybody I know is listening. So we'll carry the testimony. I will join in with some commentary throughout, I'm sure. I'll leave my microphone open, and when there's a biting comment waiting to be made, I will make it. Otherwise, we will listen. Right now, what's happening is Jeff Sessions' opening statement. We heard from the chair of the committee, Richard Burr, and the vice chair of the committee, Senator Warner. And now Jeff Sessions is giving his opening statement.
Whether I had ever met with any Russian officials. This was the first time that question had squarely been posed to me. On the same day, we provided that reporter with the information related to the meeting that I and my staff had held in my Senate office with Ambassador Kislyak, as well as the brief encounter in July after a speech that I had given during the convention in Cleveland, Ohio. I also provided the reporter with a list of 25 foreign ambassador meetings that I'd had during 2016. In addition, I provided supplemental testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee to explain this event. So I readily acknowledge these two meetings, and certainly not one thing happened that was improper in any one of those meetings. Let me also explain clearly the circumstances of my recusal from the investigation into the Russian interference with the 2016 election.
He has been emphatic in his denial of any wrongdoing or any meeting with the Russians so far.
On Thursday, February 9th, the very next day, as I had promised to the Judiciary Committee I would do, at least at an early date, I met with career department officials, including a senior ethics official, to discuss some things publicly reported in the press that might have some bearing on whether or not I should recuse myself in this case. From that point, February 10th, until I announced my formal recusal on March 2nd, I was never briefed on any investigative details, did not access any information about the investigation. I received only the limited information that the department's career officials determined was necessary for me to form and make a recusal decision. As such, I have no knowledge about this investigation as it is ongoing today beyond what has been publicly reported. I don't even read that carefully. And I have taken no action whatsoever with regard to any such investigation. On the date of my formal recusal, my chief of staff sent an email to the heads of relevant departments, including by name to Director Comey of the FBI, to instruct them to inform their staffs of this recusal and to advise them not to brief me or involve me in any way in any such matters. And in fact, they have not. Importantly, I recuse myself not because of any asserted wrongdoing or any belief that I may have been involved in any wrongdoing in the campaign, but because a Department of Justice regulation, 28 CFR 45.2, I felt required it. That regulation states, in effect, that department employees should not participate in investigations of a campaign if they served as a campaign advisor. So the scope of my recusal, however, does not and cannot interfere with my ability to oversee the Department of Justice, including the FBI, which has an $8 billion budget and 35,000 employees. I presented to the president my concerns and those of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein about the ongoing leadership issues at the FBI, as stated in my letter recommending the removal of Mr. Comey along with the Deputy Attorney General's memorandum on that issue, which have been released publicly by the White House. Those represent a clear statement of my views. I adopted Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's points that he made in his memorandum and made my recommendation. It is absurd, frankly, to suggest that a recusal from a single specific investigation would render the Attorney General unable to manage the leadership of the various Department of Justice law enforcement components that conduct thousands of investigations. Finally, during his testimony, Mr. Comey discussed a conversation that he and I had about the meeting Mr. Comey had with the President. I'm happy to share with the committee my recollection of that conversation that I had with Mr. Comey. Following a routine morning threat briefing, Mr. Comey spoke to me and my chief of staff. While he did not provide me with any of the substance of his conversation with the President, apparently the day before, Mr. Comey expressed concern about proper communications protocol with the White House and with the President. I responded. He didn't recall this, but I responded to his comment by agreeing that the FBI and the Department of Justice needed to be careful to follow department policies regarding appropriate contacts with the White House. Mr. Comey had served in the department for better than two decades, and I was confident that he understood and would abide by the well-established rules limiting communications with the White House, especially about ongoing investigations. That's what's so important to control. My comments encouraged him to do just that, and indeed, as I understand it, he in fact did that. Our Department of Justice rules on proper communications between the Department and the White House have been in place for years. Mr. Comey well knew them. I thought and assumed correctly that he complied with them. So I'll finish with this. I recuse myself from any investigation into the campaign for President, but I did not recuse myself from defending my honor against scurrilous and false allegations. At all times throughout the course the confirmation process, and since becoming Attorney General, I have dedicated myself to the highest standards. I've earned a reputation for that at home and in this body, I believe, over decades of performance. The people of this country expect an honest and transparent government, and that's what we're giving them. This President wants to focus on the people of this country to ensure they are treated fairly and kept safe. The Trump agenda is to improve the lives of the American people. I know some have different ways of achieving this and different agendas, but that is his agenda, and it's one I share. Importantly, as Attorney General, I have a responsibility to enforce the laws of this nation, to protect this country from its enemies, and to ensure the fair administration of justice. And I intend to work every day with our fine team and the superb professionals in the Department of Justice to advance the important work we have to do.
I want to know what's so funny. He keeps smirking.
False attacks, the innuendos,
he's way too happy and outraged at the same time.
Will not intimidate me. In fact, these events have only strengthened my resolve to fulfill my duty to reduce crime, to support our federal, state, and local law enforcement officers who work on our streets every day. Just last week, it was reported that overdose deaths in this country are rising faster than ever recorded. Last year was 52,000. The New York Times just estimated next year will be 62,000 overdose deaths. The murder rate is up over 10%, the largest increase since 1968. Together, we are telling the gangs, the cartels, the fraudsters, and the terrorists, we are coming after you, every one of our citizens, no matter who they are or where they live, has the right to be safe in their homes and communities. And I will not be deterred. I will not allow this great department to be deterred from its vital mission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Warner. I have a great honor to appear before you today, and I will do my best to answer your questions.
General Sessions, thank you. Thank you for that testimony. I'd like to note for members, the chair and the vice chairman will be recognized for 10 minutes. Members will be recognized for 5 minutes. And I'd like to remind our members that we are in open session. No references to classified or committee-sensitive materials.
This is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator With Richard that, Burr, talking. He's about to ask minutes. Questions for 10 minutes. Here we go, after he coughs.
General Sessions, you talked about the Mayflower Hotel, where the president gave his first foreign policy speech, and it's been covered in the press that the president was there, you were there, others were there. From your testimony, you said you don't remember whether Ambassador Kislyak was there, the Russian ambassador. Is that correct?
I did not remember that, but I understand he was there. So I don't doubt that he was. I believe that representations are correct. In fact, I recently saw a video of him coming into the room.
But you never remember having a conversation or a meeting with Ambassador Kislyak?
I do not.
And there was, in that event, was there ever a private room setting that that you were involved in?
No.
With any?
Other than the reception area that was shut off from I guess the main crowd, two to three dozen people.
I would take for granted at an event like this, the president shook some hands.
Yes, he came in and shook hands in the group.
Okay. You mentioned that there were some staff that were with you at that event.
My legislative director at the time.
Your Senate staff?
Senate legislative director. Who was a retired U.S. Army colonel who served on the Armed Services staff with Senator John Warner before she joined my staff, was with me in the reception area and throughout the rest of the events.
Would you say that you were there as a United States senator or as a surrogate of the campaign for this event?
I came there as an interested person,
Answer the question.
See how President Trump would do in his first major foreign policy address. I believe he'd only given one major speech before. That would maybe at the Jewish AIPAC event. And so it was an interesting time for me to observe his delivery and the message he would make. That was my main purpose of being there.
Now, you reported two other meetings with Ambassador Kislyak, one in July on the sidelines of the Republican convention, I believe, and one in September in your Senate office. Have you had any other interactions with government officials over the year in a campaign capacity? I'm not asking you from the standpoint of your Senate life, but in the campaign capacity.
No, Mr. Chairman. I've stretched racked my brain to make sure I could answer any of those questions correctly, and I did not. I would just offer for you that when asked about whether I had any meetings with Russians by the reporter in March, we immediately recalled the conversation, the encounter I had at the convention, and the meeting in my office, and made that public. I never intended not to include that. I would have gladly have reported the meeting, the encounter that may have occurred, that some say occurred, in the Mayflower, if I had remembered it or if it actually occurred, which I don't remember that it did.
General Sessions, on March 2, 2017, you formally recused yourself from any involvement in the Russian investigation being conducted by the FBI and the Department of Justice. What are the specific reasons that you chose to recuse yourself?
Well, the specific reason, Mr. Chairman, is a CFR, a Code of Federal Regulations, put out by the Department of Justice, part of the Department of Justice rules, and it says this. I'll read from it, 28 CFR 45.2. unless authorized, no employee shall participate in a criminal investigation or prosecution if he has a personal or political relationship with any person involved in the conduct of an investigation. It goes on to say for political a political campaign, and it says if you have a close identification with an elected official or candidate arising from service as a principal advisor, you should not participate in an investigation of that campaign. Many have suggested that my recusal is because I felt I was a subject of the investigation myself, that I may have done something wrong, but this is the reason I recused myself. I felt I was required to under the rules of the Department of Justice, and as a leader of the Department of Justice, I should comply with the rules, obviously.
So did your legal counsel basically know from day one you would have to recuse yourself of this investigation because of the current statute?
Well, I do have a timeline of what occurred. I was sworn in on the 9th, I believe, of February. On the 10th, had my first meeting to generally discuss this issue where the CFR was not discussed. We had several other meetings, and it became clear to me over time that I qualified as a significant principal advisor type person to the campaign, and it was the appropriate and right thing for me to recuse myself.
This could explain Director Comey's comments that he knew that there was a likelihood you would recuse yourself because he was probably familiar with the same statute.
Well, I think probably so. I'm sure that the attorneys in the Department of Justice probably communicated with them. Because, Mr. Chairman, let me say this to you clearly. In effect, as a matter of fact, I recused myself that day. I never received any information about the campaign. I thought there was a problem with me being able to serve as Attorney General over this issue, and I felt I would possibly have to recuse myself, and I took the position correctly, I believe, not to involve myself in the campaign in any way, and I did not.
You made a reference to your chief of staff sending out an email immediately notifying internally of your decision to recuse. Would you ask your chief of staff to make that email available?
We would be pleased to do so, and I think I have it with me now.
Thank you, General Sessions. Have you had any interactions with the special counsel, Robert Mueller, since his appointment?
I have not. With regard to the email we sent out, Mr. Comey, Director Comey, indicated that he did not know that when I recused myself or did not receive notice. One of those emails went to him by name. So a lot happens in our offices. I'm not accusing him of any wrongdoing, but in fact, it was sent to him and to his name.
Okay. General Sessions, as you said, Mr. Comey testified at length before the committee about his interactions with the president, in some cases highlighting your presence at those meetings. And you addressed the meeting where all were asked to leave except for Director Comey, and he had a private meeting with the president. And you said that he did inform you of how uncomfortable that was, and your recommendation was that the FBI and DOJ needed to follow the rules limiting further correspondence. Did Director Comey ever express additional discomfort with conversations that the president might have had with him? Because he had two additional meetings and I think a total of 6 phone calls.
That is correct. There's nothing wrong with the president having a communication with the FBI director. What is problematic for any Department of Justice employee is to talk to any cabinet persons or White House officials, high officials, about ongoing investigations that are not properly cleared through the top levels of the Department of Justice. And so it was a regulation I think is healthy. I thought we needed and strongly believe we needed to restore discipline within our department to adhere to just those kind of rules, but plus leaking rules and some of the other things that I think are a bit lax and need to be restored.
You couldn't have had a conversation with the president about the investigation because you were never briefed on the investigation.
That is correct. I would note that with regard to the private meeting that Director Comey had, by his own admission, I believe there is many as six such meetings. Several of them he had with President Trump. I think he had two with President Obama. So it's not improper per se, but it would not be justified for a department official to share information about an ongoing investigation without prior review and clearance from above.
General Sessions, just one last question. You were the chair of this foreign policy team for the Trump campaign. To the best of your knowledge, did that team ever meet?
We met a couple of times, maybe. Some of the people did.
Maybe.
But we never functioned, frankly, Mr. Chairman, as a coherent team. We had various meetings.
Were there any members of that team you never met?
Yes.
Okay. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, General Sessions.
As Mark Warner,
I mentioned in my opening
Virginia.
Statement, we appreciate your appearance here, but we do see this as the first step, and I would just like to get your commitment that you will agree to make yourself available as the committee needs in the weeks and months ahead.
Senator Warner, I will commit to appear before this committee and other committees as appropriate. I don't think it's good policy to continually bring cabinet members or the attorney general before multiple committees going over the same things over and over.
I know other members of the Judiciary Committee or Appropriations Committee may want to raise those issues. But let me just ask about this committee.
I just gave you my answer, Mr.
Thank you. What about, can we also get your commitment, since there will be questions about some of these meetings that took place or not, that we could get access to documents or memoranda or your day book or something so we can...
Mr. Chairman, we will be glad to provide appropriate responses to your questions and review them carefully and try to be responsive.
Yesterday, a friend of the president was reported to suggesting that President Trump was considering removing Director Mueller as special counsel. Do you have confidence in Director Mueller's ability to conduct his investigation fairly and impartially?
Well, first, I don't know about these reports and have no... basis
I'm asking you, sir, validity.
I have known Mr. Mueller over the years. He served 12 years as a FBI director. I knew him before that, and I have confidence in Mr. Mueller.
So you have confidence he can do his job.
But I'm not going to discuss any hypotheticals or what might be a factual situation in the future that I'm not aware of today because I know nothing about the
investigation. Notice the difference in attitude when answering questions from the Democrat than he was when he was answering the questions from the Republican.
Talk to him about it.
Talk about combative.
Now, we commit to this committee not to take any personal actions that might result in Director Mueller's firing or dismissal?
Well, I think I probably could say that with confidence because I'm recused from the investigation. In fact, the way it works, Senator Warner, is that the acting attorney general
I'm aware of the process, but I just wanted to get you on the record that you would not.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
With your recusal, you would not take any actions to try to have Director or Special Investigator Mueller removed.
I wouldn't think that would be appropriate for me to do.
Yes, sir, I agree. To your knowledge, have any Department of Justice officials been involved with conversations about any possibility of presidential pardons about any of the individuals involved with the Russia investigation?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not able to comment on conversations with high officials within the White House. That would be a violation of the communications rule that
is the basis of that unwillingness to answer based on executive privilege or what?
It's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice not to comment on conversations that the Attorney General has had with the President of the United States for confidential reasons that really are founded in the co-equal branch powers in the Constitution of the United States.
But just so I'm understanding, does that mean, are you claiming executive privilege here today, sir?
I'm not claiming executive privilege because that's the president's power, and I have no power to claim
executive privilege. What about conversations with other Department of Justice or other White House officials about potential pardons? Not the president, sir.
Mr. Chairman, without in any way suggesting that I have had any conversations concerning pardons, totally apart from that, there are privileges of communication within the Department of Justice that we share, all of us do. We have a right to have full and robust debate within the Department of Justice. We encourage people to speak up and argue cases on different sides, and those arguments are not
I would hope, though,
historically, we've seen that they shouldn't be revealed.
I would hope that you would agree that since you've recused yourself from this investigation, that if the president or others would pardon someone during the midst of this investigation, while our investigation or Director Mueller's investigation, that would be, I would think, problematic. One of the comments you made in your testimony was that you'd reached this conclusion about the performance of then-Director Comey's ability to lead the FBI, that you agreed with Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's memo. The fact that you'd worked with Director Comey for some time, did you ever have a conversation as a superior of Director Comey with his failure to perform or some of these accusations that he wasn't running the FBI in a good way or that somehow the FBI is in turmoil? Did you have any conversations with Director Comey about those subjects?
I did not.
So you were his superior, and there were some fairly harsh things said about Director Comey. You never thought it was appropriate to raise those concerns before he was actually terminated by the president?
I did not do so. A memorandum was prepared by the Deputy Attorney General, who evaluated his performance, noted some serious problems with it.
And you agreed with those conclusions?
I agreed with those. In fact, Senator Warner, we had talked about it even before I was confirmed and before he was confirmed. It's something that we both agreed to, that a fresh start at the FBI was probably the best thing.
It just, again, seems a little – I could understand that if you talked about that before you came on, you had a chance for a fresh start. There was no fresh start. Suddenly we're in the midst of the investigation, and with timing that seems a little peculiar, at least to me, was out of the blue, the president fires the FBI director, and if there are all these problems of disarray and a lack of esprit de corps at the FBI, all things that the acting director of the FBI denied is the case, I would have thought that somebody would have had that kind of conversation with Director Comey. He was at least been owed that. Let's go to the April 27th meeting. Has been brought up, I think the chairman brought it up. By the time April 27th came around, you'd already been named as the chair of then-candidate Trump's National Security Advisory. So showing up that meeting would be appropriate, not only
that was the Mayflower Hotel.
Right. Yes, sir. Time. Yes, sir. And my understanding was that the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was at that meeting as well?
I believe he was,
Why?
Yes.
You don't recollect whether Mr. Kushner had any conversations with Ambassador Kislyak at that session?
I do not.
Okay. And to the best of your memory, you had no conversation with Ambassador Kislyak at that meeting?
I don't recall it, Senator Warner. It would have been, certainly, I can assure you, nothing improper if I'd had a conversation with him, and it's conceivable that occurred. I just don't remember it.
But there was nothing in your notes or memory so that when you had a chance, and you did, and I appreciate, correct the record about the other two sessions in response to Senator Frank and Senator Leahy, this one didn't pop into your memory that maybe in the overabundance of caution that you ought to report that this session as well?
Well, I guess I could say that I possibly had a meeting, but I still do not recall it, and I did not in any way fail to record something in my testimony or in my subsequent letter intentionally false.
I understand that, sir. I'm just trying to understand when you corrected the record, and clearly by the time you had a chance to correct the record, I would have thought that you would have known that Ambassador Kislyak was at that April 27th session It received some, quite a bit of press notoriety. And again, echoing what the chairman has said, just again for the record, there was no other meeting with any other officials of the Russian government during the campaign season.
Not to my recollection. And I would just say with regard to the two encounters, one at the Mayflower Hotel that you referred to.
Yes, sir.
I came there not knowing he was going to be there. I don't have any recollection of even knowing he would be there. I didn't have any communications with him before or after that event. And likewise, at the event at the convention, right. I went off the convention grounds to a college campus for an event that had been
but
set
at, up. At the Mayflower event.
Well, let me just follow this up on that one. I didn't know he would be in the audience and had no...
So at the Mayflower event, though, there was this... I guess, kind of VIP reception first, and then people went into the speech. Is that just so I get a...
That's my impression. That's my recollection.
And you were part of the VIP reception?
Yes.
Yes, sir. General Sessions, one of the, again, troubling things that that I need to sort through is, you know, Mr. Comey's testimony last week was that he felt uncomfortable when the president... asked everyone else to leave the room. He left the impression that you lingered with perhaps a sense that you felt uncomfortable about it as well. I'm going to allow you to obviously answer and correct if that's not the right impression. After this meeting took place, which clearly Director Comey felt had some level of uncomfortableness, you never asked Director Comey what took place in that meeting?
Well, I would just say it this way. We were there. I was standing there, and without revealing any conversation that took place, what I do recall is that I did depart. I believe everyone else did depart, and Director Comey was sitting in front of the president's desk, and they were talking. So that's what I do remember. I believe it was the next day that he said something, expressed concern about being left alone with the president. But that in itself is not problematic.
He
did not tell me at that time any details about anything that was said that was improper. I affirmed his concern that we should be following the proper guidelines of the Department of Justice and basically backed him up in his concerns and that he should not carry on any conversation with the president or anyone else about an investigation in a way that was not proper. I felt he, so long in the department, former deputy attorney general, as I recall, knew those policies probably a good deal better than I did.
Thank you, sir, and I thank you, Mr. Chairman. But it did appear that Mr. Comey felt that the conversation was improper.
He was concerned about it. And his recollection of what he said to me about his concern, is consistent with my recollection.
Senator Risch.
Attorney General Sessions, good to hear you talk about how important this Russian interference and active measures in our campaign is. I don't think there's any American who would disagree with the fact that we need to drill down to this, know what happened, get it out in front of the American people and do what we can to stop it again. And that's what this committee...
This is Senator Risch from Idaho, who in the Comey hearing made excuse after excuse for Donald Trump. So this should be fascinating.
There was constant communications between the Trump campaign and the Russians and collusion regarding the elections. You recall that that article when it came out?
Not exactly.
Generally.
But that was generally, I remember those charges.
Mr. Comey told us when he was here last week that that he had a very specific recollection. In fact, he chased it down through the intelligence community and was not able to find a scintilla of evidence of that effect. Then he sought out both Republicans and Democrats up here to tell them that this was false, that there was no such facts anywhere that that corroborated what the New York Times had reported. Nonetheless, after that, this committee took that on as one of the things, and we've spent really substantially more time on that than we have on the Russian active measures. We've been through thousands of pages of information, interviewed witnesses, and everything else. We're really no different than where we were when this whole thing started. But and there's been no reports that I know of any factual information in that regard. Are you aware of any such information of collusion?
Is that arose from the dossier, so-called dossier, Senator Rich? Is that what you're referring
well,
to?
Well, we're anywhere.
I believe that's the report that Senator Franken hit me with when I was testifying, and it, I think, has been pretty substantially discredited. But
no, it hasn't. It has not been discredited.
That would suggest I participated in the continuing.
Not all of it has been affirmed, but it has not been discredited.
As a surrogate is absolutely false.
Mr. Sessions, there's been all this talk about conversations, and that you had some conversations with the Russians. Senators up here who are on either foreign relations, intelligence, or armed services, conversations with officers of other governments or ambassadors or what have you are everyday occurrences here, multiple time occurrences for most of us. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is, yes.
And indeed, if you run into one in a grocery store, you're going to have a conversation with them. Is that fair?
Could very well happen. And be nothing improper.
All right. On the other hand, collusion with the Russians or any other government, for that matter, when it comes to our elections, certainly would be improper and illegal. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely.
All right. Are you willing to sit here and tell the American people, unfiltered by what the media is going to put out, that you participated in no conversations of any kind where there was collusion between the Trump campaign and any other foreign government?
I can say that absolutely, and I have no hesitation to do so.
Mr. Sessions, you're a former U.S. attorney, former United States Senator, and the Attorney General of the United States. You participated, as you've described, in the Trump campaign. And as such, you traveled with the campaign, I gather?
I did.
You spoke for the campaign at times?
Well, on a number of occasions. I was not continually.
And he said lock her up.
Based upon your experience and based upon your participation in the campaign, did you hear even a whisper or a suggestion or anyone making reference within that campaign that somehow the Russians were involved in that campaign?
I did not.
Okay. No. What would you have done if you'd have heard that?
Well, I would have been shocked, and I would have known it was improper.
And headed for the exit, I suppose.
Well, maybe.
Right.
This was, a serious. This is a serious matter because what you're talking about is hacking into a private person or DNC computer and obtaining information and spreading that out. That's just not right. And I believe it's likely that laws were violated if that actually occurred. So it's an improper thing.
Mr. Sessions, has any person from the White House or the administration, including the President of the United States, either directed you or asked you to do any unlawful or illegal act since you've been Attorney General of the United States?
No, Senator Rich.
Thank
not.
You. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, good. His 5 minutes are up. Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein of California is next.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Attorney General.
Thank you.
On May 19th, Mr. Rosenstein, in a statement to the House of Representatives, essentially told them that he learned on May 8th that President Trump intended to remove Director Comey. When you wrote your letter on May 9, did you know that the president had already decided to fire Director Comey?
Senator Feinstein, I would say that I believe it's been made public that the president asked us our opinion. It was given, and he asked us to put that in writing. I don't know how much more he said about it than that, but I believe he has talked about it, and I would let his words speak for themselves.
That wasn't the question.
Well, on May 11th, on NBC Nightly News, 2 days later, the president stated he was going to fire Comey regardless of the recommendation. So I'm puzzled about the recommendation because the decision had been made. So what was the need for you to write a recommendation?
Well, we were asked our opinion, and when we expressed it, which was consistent with the memorandum and the letter we wrote, I felt comfortable, and I guess the Deputy Attorney General did too, in providing that information in writing.
So do you concur with the President that he was going to fire Comey regardless of recommendation because the problem was the Russian investigation?
Senator Feinstein, I guess I'll just have to let his words speak for himself. I'm not sure what was in his mind explicitly when we talked with him.
Did you ever discuss Director Comey's FBI handling of the Russia investigations with the President or anyone else?
Senator Feinstein, that would call for a communication between the Attorney General and
that.
The President, and I'm not able to comment on that.
You are not able to answer the question here whether you ever discussed that with him?
That's correct.
And how do you view that? Since you discussed his termination, why wouldn't you discuss the reasons?
Well, those were put in writing and sent to the President, and he made those public, so he made that public.
Not, so you'd had no verbal conversation with him about the firing of Mr. Comey?
I'm not able to discuss with you or confirm or deny the nature of private conversations that I may have had with the President
on
this subject or others.
Or anything
else. And I know
else.
That, how this will be discussed, but that's the rules that has been
others,
long adhered to by the Department of Justice, as you know, Senator Feinstein.
You're a longtime colleague, but we heard Mr. Coates and we heard Admiral Rogers say essentially the same thing, when it was easy just to say if the answer was no, no.
That's right.
Well, it would have been easy to say if it was yes, yes, but both would have been improper.
Okay. So how exactly were you involved in the termination of Director Comey? Because I am looking at your letter dated May 9, and you say the director of the FBI must be someone who follows faithfully the rules and principles, who sets the right example for our law enforcement officials. Therefore, I must recommend that you remove Director Comey and identify an experienced and qualified individual to lead the great men and women of the FBI. Do you really believe that this had to do with Director Comey's performance with the men and women of the FBI?
There was a clear view of mine and of Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein, as he set out at some length in his memoranda, which I adopted and sent forward to the President, that we had problems there, and it was my best judgment that a fresh start at the FBI was the appropriate thing to do. And when asked, I said that to the President, it's something I had adhered to. Deputy Rosenstein's letter dealt with a number of things. When Mr. Comey declined the Clinton prosecution, that was really a usurpation of the authority of the federal prosecutors in the Department of Justice. It was a stunning development. The FBI is the investigative team. They don't decide prosecution policies. And so that was a thunderous thing. He also commented at some length on the declination of the Clinton prosecution, which you should not normally, and you shouldn't do. Policies have been historic. If you decline, you decline, and you don't talk about it. There were other things that had happened that indicated to me a lack of discipline, and it caused controversy on both sides of the aisle. And I had come to the conclusion that a fresh start was appropriate and did not mind putting that in writing.
My time is up. Thank you very much.
Senator Rubio.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Attorney
Marco
General.
Rubio,
I want to go back
Florida.
To February 14th
here we
and kind
go.
Of close the loop on the details. Director Comey was here providing
Someone
great
else is gonna
detail
give him cover.
About that day. So what I've heard so far is there was a meeting in the Oval Office on the 14th. You recall being there along with him. At some point, the meeting concluded. The president, everyone got up to leave. The president asked Director Comey to stay behind, correct?
Well, that's a communication in the White House that I would not comment on.
All right,
Oh, give me a break.
You remember seeing him stay behind?
Yes.
Okay. And his testimony was that you lingered. And his view of it was you lingered because you knew that you needed to stay. That was his characterization. Do you remember lingering? Do you remember feeling like you needed to stay?
I do recall being one of the last ones to leave.
Did you decide to be one of the last ones to leave?
I don't know how that occurred. We had finished counterterrorism briefing. A number of people were there, and people were filtering out. I eventually left, and I do recall that I think I was one of the last two or three to leave.
Would it be fair to say that you felt like you needed to stay because it involved the FBI director?
Well, I don't know that how I would characterize that, Senator Rubio. I left. It didn't seem to me to be a major problem. I knew that Director Comey, longtime experience in the Department of Justice, could handle himself well.
So you saw him after that. He characterized it as he went up to you and said, you know, never leave me alone with the president again. It's not appropriate. And he said, this is his characterization, you just kind of shrugged like as if to say, what am I supposed to do about it?
Well, I think I described it more completely, correctly. He raised that issue with me, I believe, the next day. I think that was correct. And he expressed concern to me about that private conversation. And I agreed with him, essentially, that there are rules on private conversations with the president. But there's not a prohibition on a private discussion with the president, as I believe he's acknowledged six or more himself with President Obama and President Trump. So I didn't feel like that's the first. And he gave me no detail.
He
about
said he didn't have them with Obama.
He was concerned about
except
so
to say goodbye
so
and one other very short conversation.
If he called me, he certainly knew that with regard. That he could call his direct supervisor, which in the Department of Justice, the direct supervisor to the FBI is the Deputy Attorney General. He could have complained to the deputy or to me at any time if he felt pressured, but I had no doubt that he would not yield to any pressure.
Do you know if the president records conversations in the Oval Office or anywhere in the White House?
I do not.
Let me ask you this. If, in fact, any president was to record conversations in their official duties in the White House or the like, would there be an obligation to preserve those records?
I don't know, Senator Rubio. Probably so.
You should know. You're Attorney General, moron.
I want to go to the campaign for a moment. As I'm sure you're aware, as it's been widely reported, you know, Russian intelligence agencies often pose not simply as an official, but in covers as businessmen, a journalist, and the like. At any point during the campaign, did you have an interaction with anyone who, in hindsight, you look back and say they were trying to influence me or gain insight that, in hindsight, you look at and wonder?
I don't believe in my conversations with the three times.
General.
Well, I met a lot of people, a lot of foreign officials who wanted to argue their case for their country and to point out things that they thought were important for their countries.
But
yes,
never,
that's a normal thing, I guess, we talk about.
Right, but and as far as someone who's not an official from another country, just a businessman or anyone walking down the street who kind of struck you as someone that was trying to find out what you were up to or what the campaign was up to, you never remember any sort of interaction that in hindsight appears suspicious?
Well, I'd have to rack my brain, but I don't recall it now.
My last question. You were on the foreign policy team. The platform, the Republican platform, was changed to not provide defensive weapons to Ukraine. Were you involved in that decision? Do you know how that change was made or who was involved in making that change?
I was not active in the platform committee, did not participate in that, and don't think I had any direct involvement.
Do you know who did, or do you have no recollection of a debate about that issue internally in the campaign?
I never watched the debate. if it occurred on the platform committee. I think it did. So I don't recall that, Senator Rubio. I'd have to think about that.
Senator Wyden.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for holding this hearing in the open, in full view of the American people where it belongs. I believe the American people have had it with stonewalling. Americans don't want to hear that answers to relevant questions are privileged and off limits, or that they can't be provided in public, or that it would be, quote, inappropriate for witnesses to tell us what they know. We are talking about an attack on our democratic institutions, and stonewalling of any kind is unacceptable. And General Sessions has acknowledged that there is no legal basis for this stonewalling. So now to questions. Last Thursday, I asked former Director Comey about the FBI's interactions with you, General Sessions, prior to your stepping aside from the Russian investigation. Mr. Comey said that your continued engagement with the Russian investigation was, quote, problematic, and he, Mr. Comey, could not discuss it in public. Mr. Comey also said that FBI personnel had been calling for you to step aside from the investigation at least 2 weeks before you finally did so. Now, in your prepared statement, you stated you received only, quote, limited information necessary to inform your recusal decision. But given Director Comey's statement, we need to know what that was. Were you aware of any concerns at the FBI or elsewhere in government about your contacts with the Russians or any other matters relevant to whether you should step aside from the Russian investigation?
Senator Wyden, I am not stonewalling. I am following the historic policies of the Department of Justice. You don't walk into any hearing or committee meeting and reveal confidential communications with the President of the United States, who's entitled to receive confidential communications in your best judgment about a host of issues, and have to be accused of stonewalling for not answering them. So I would push back on that. Secondly,
of course you would.
Mr. Comey, perhaps he didn't know, but I basically recused myself the first day I got into the office because I never accessed files. I never learned the names of investigators. I never met with them. I never asked for any documentation. The documentation, what little I received, was mostly already in the media and was presented by the senior ethics public responsibility, professional responsibility attorney in the department.
General,
and I made a honest and proper a decision to recuse myself, as I told Senator Feinstein and the members of the committee I would do when they confirmed me.
General Sessions, respectfully, you're not answering the question.
Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? There are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it.
Leaked?
And I've tried to give my best and truthful answers to any committee I've appeared before, and it's really people are suggesting through innuendo that I have been not honest about matters, and I've tried to be honest.
My time is short. You've made your point that you think Mr. Comey is engaging in innuendo. We're going to keep digging
well,
on this.
Well, Senator Wyden, he did not say that.
He said it was problematic, and I asked you what was problematic about it.
Some of that leaked out of the committee that he said in closed sessions.
What?
Okay. One more question.
No, he said that in open because I heard it.
Director, whether your role in firing him violated your recusal, given that President Trump said he fired Comey because of the Russian investigation. Director Comey said this was a reasonable question. So I want to ask you just point blank, why did you sign the letter recommending the firing of Director Comey when it violated your recusal?
It did not violate my recusal. It did not violate my recusal. That would be the answer to that. And the letter that I signed represented my views that had been formulated for some time.
Mr. Chairman, just if I can finish, that answer, in my view, doesn't pass the smell test. The president tweeted repeatedly about his anger at investigations into his associates in Russia. The day before you wrote your letter, he tweeted that the collusion story was a total hoax and asked, when will this taxpayer-funded charade end? I don't think your answer passes the smell test.
Well, Senator Wyden, I think I should be allowed to briefly respond at least and would say the letter, the memorandum that Senator, Deputy Rosenstein wrote and my letter that accompanied it represented my views of the situation.
I'll ask that on the second round. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Sessions, I want to clarify who did
Susan
what
Collins of Maine
with regard to the firing of Mr. Comey. First of all, let me ask you, when did you have your first conversation with Rod Rosenstein about Mr. Comey?
We talked about it before either one of us were confirmed. It was a topic of, you know, conversation about among people who'd served in the department a long time. They knew that what had happened that fall was pretty dramatically unusual. Many people felt it was very wrong. And so it was in that context that we discussed it. And we both found that we shared a common view that a fresh start would be appropriate.
And this was based on Mr. Comey's handling of the investigation involving Hillary Clinton, in which you said that he usurped the authority of prosecutors at the Department of Justice?
Yes, that was part of it. The commenting on the investigation in ways that go beyond the proper policies. We need to restore Senator Collins, I think, the classic discipline in the department. My team, we've discussed this. There's been too much leaking and too much talking publicly about investigations. In the long run, the department historic rule that you remain mum about ongoing investigations is the better policy.
Now, subsequently, the president asked for you to put your views in writing. You've testified today. And I believe that you were right to recuse yourself from the ongoing Russian investigation. But then on May 9th, you wrote to the president recommending that Mr. Comey be dismissed. And obviously, this went back many months to the earlier conversations you had had with Mr. Rosenstein. But my question is, why do you believe that your recommendation to fire Director Comey was not inconsistent with your March 2nd recusal?
Thank you. The recusal involved one case involved in the Department of Justice and in the FBI. They conduct thousands of investigations. I'm the Attorney General of the United States. It's my responsibility to our Judiciary Committee and other committees to ensure that that department is run properly. I have to make difficult decisions, and I do not believe that it is a sound position to say that if you're recused for a single case involving any one of the great agencies like DEA or U.S. Marshals or ATF that are part of the Department of Justice, you can't make a decision about the leadership in that agency.
Now, if you had known that the president subsequently was going to go on TV and in an interview with Lester Holt of NBC would say that this Russian thing was the reason for his decision to dismiss the FBI director, would you have felt uncomfortable about the timing of the decision?
Well, I would just say this, Senator Collins. I don't think it's appropriate to deal with those kind of hypotheticals. I have to deal in actual issues, and I would respectfully not comment on that.
Well, it wasn't exactly scintillating testimony today in the Jeff Sessions hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee into Russia and the 2016 election. But I thought, well, it was important to hear what he had to say. Sorry we didn't get a whole lot out of him. So with that, we're going to end for the day. I'll be back tomorrow with a regular show. It'll be, I believe, Kelly Carlin joining us tomorrow. Thanks for listening. I'm Nicole Sandler, the Progressive Voices Network.
News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on Monday blocked the president from enforcing an executive order seeking to temporarily ban U.S. travel for people from six Muslim-majority countries, dealing another legal blow to the White House. The court included Trump's June 5th tweet that said, "We need a travel ban for certain dangerous countries," to show that he believed it was the countries, not their 180 million citizens, that were inherently dangerous. The judges also cited White House spokesman Sean Spicer's recent confirmation about Trump's tweets to back up their ruling.
Are President Trump's tweets considered official White House statements?
Well, the president is the president of the United States, so they're considered official statements by the President of the United States.
In its 78-page opinion, the court said Trump exceeded the scope of his broad powers to police U.S. borders. The case is already headed to the Supreme Court. The attorneys general of Maryland and D.C. filed a lawsuit on Monday against the president, alleging that he violated the Constitution by retaining ties to his global business empire and by accepting foreign payments while in office. Washington, D.C., Attorney General Carl Racineau.
Attorney General Brian Frost and I are here today to announce that earlier this morning, the state of Maryland and the District of Columbia filed a lawsuit in federal court against the President of the United States. The suit alleges that President Trump is flagrantly violating the Constitution, which explicitly bars presidents from receiving gifts or inducements from foreign or domestic government entities. Never in the history of this country have we had a president with these kinds of extensive business entanglements, or a president who refused to adequately distance themselves from their holdings. President Trump's businesses and his dealings violate the Constitution's anti-corruption provisions, known as the emoluments clauses.
The president held his first full cabinet meeting on Monday. After falsely claiming he'd pass more legislation than any past president other than FDR, Trump invited his cabinet secretaries to praise his and the administration's work.
I'm going to start with our vice president.
Thank you, Mr. President. And greatest privilege of my life is to serve as vice president to a president who's keeping his word to the American people.
Mr. President, my privilege to be here. Deeply honored, and I want to thank you for keeping your commitment to the American workers.
Mr. President, what an incredible honor it is to lead the Department of Health and Human Services at this pivotal time under your leadership. I can't thank you enough for the privilege that you've given me and the leadership that you've shown.
I want to thank you for getting this country moving again and also working again.
On behalf of the entire senior staff around you, Mr. President, we thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda and the American people, and we're continuing to work very hard every day to accomplish those goals.
Although it was more frightening than funny, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and his staff responded by poking fun with a parody video.
I want to thank everybody for coming. I just thought we'd go around the room. Lucy, how'd we do on the Sunday show yesterday?
Your tone was perfect. You were right on message.
Michelle, how'd my hair look coming out of the gym this morning?
You have great hair. Nobody has better hair than you.
Before we go any further, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity and blessing to serve your agenda.
That's great.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions testifying in an open hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday about his role in the Russia investigation. This, as a Trump confidant, Newsmax CEO Chris Ruddy tells the PBS NewsHour.
I think he's considering
perhaps terminating the special counsel. I think he's weighing that option. I think it's pretty clear by what one of his lawyers said on television recently.
As the nation is preoccupied by these questions and more, Senate Republicans are working behind closed doors, crafting a new bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. In the Senate Finance Committee, Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill railed against the secretive process.
Will we have a hearing on the health care proposal?
I think we've already had one, but...
No, I mean on the proposal that you're planning to bring to the floor of the Senate for a vote. Will there be a hearing?
Well, I don't know that there's going to be another hearing, but we've invited you to participate and give your ideas.
No, that's not true, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say, I watched carefully all of the hearings that went on the Affordable Health Care Act. Dozens of Republican amendments were offered and accepted. And when you say that you're inviting us, and I heard you, Mr. Secretary, just say we'd love your support, for what? We have no idea what's being proposed. There's a group of guys in a back room somewhere that are making these decisions. There were no hearings in the House. I mean, listen, this is hard to take because I know we made mistakes on the Affordable Health Care Act, Mr. Secretary. And one of the criticisms we got over and over again that the vote was partisan. Well, you couldn't have a more partisan exercise than what you're engaged in right now. We're not even going to have a hearing on a bill that impacts 1/6 of our economy. We're not going to have an opportunity to offer a single amendment. It is all being done with an eye to try to get it by with 50 votes and the vice president.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is hoping to have a vote before the July 4th recess. I got good. And that's some of what's news for today. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener supported, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.